Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time complainer at local retail stores.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that doesn't shy away from looking into a mirror, even though for two of us that becomes harder and harder to do as the years waft inexorably by. Where did all this gray hair come from anyway?
Silver.
The study of self is at the heart of the three movies that we'll be discussing this week, beginning with Thelma, the tale of a grandmother, played by 94-year-old June Squibb, seeking to right a wrong, followed by Ghostlight, which introduces us to a man whose interest in community theater helps him cope with a family tragedy, and ending with Hitman, a Netflix film based on the story of a real guy whose assumed guises proved to be more real than his everyday self. Let's begin with a study in geriatrics. Based on a script by writer-director Josh Margolin and inspired by the memory of an experience his real-life grandmother endured, Thelma stars June Squibb, who you may recall from such movies as Nebraska, About Schmidt, and most recently as the voice of nostalgia in Inside Out 2. Squibb stars here as the title character, the elderly mother of Gail, played by Parker Posey, the mother-in-law of Alan, played by Clark Gregg, and grandmother to their son, Daniel, played by Fred Hechinger. When Thelma is scammed into thinking that her grandson has been seriously injured and pays $10,000 thinking that she is helping him, she seeks justice. At the same time, with the reluctant help of an old acquaintance, Ben, played by the late Richard Roundtree, she also proves that she is far more self-sufficient than her helicopter relatives believe, and the same holds true for her grandson, Daniel. Much of Thelma is a fantasy, despite its being inspired by real-life events, but it's the kind of fantasy that makes for an entertaining story and avoids, if just barely, being condescending to its elderly characters. Squibb and Roundtree make sure of that.
I think that Thelma was described by one critic as an improbable codger comedy, and that probably captures at least part of what's going on here. I do believe that this is focused on the performances in Thelma of our lead character, same name, and her buddy Ben. So this is sort of a caper and so forth. Underlying this whole story is something serious that's happening in the world today, and it is the scams that are being conducted and aided by AI and the ability to mimic people's voices and so forth. And so these scams are not only ensnaring older people who might be more trusting in some respects, but we know a number of people who've been subjected to this. So if anyone asks you to buy gift cards and send them to a particular place, please do not do that. So after the June Squibb character, Thelma, is scammed, and apparently this is based on something that actually happened to the writer-director's real grandma, she decides she's not going to put up with this. And despite the attempts of her family to keep her in check, she manages to track down who is responsible for the scam, and she and Ben take his little motorized scooter device and go try to find the perpetrators of this horrific crime.
All the way across Los Angeles.
They go to Van Nuys. Yes, exactly.
In a motor scooter that battery powered, that will only go 43 miles.
Right. They have to keep charging it.
Yeah. Right. So the whole thing is ridiculous, but there is a sweetness at the core of this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And the relationship, the thing I liked best about Thelma is the relationship between June Squibb's character and her grandson, because he's sort of one of those failure to launch late 20-something guys. And so he probably occupies the same space in the head of his parents, being always concerned about him. Is he going to make it?
Mm-hmm.
As the Thelma character does. So they have this bonding experience, one, because they have true affection for each other, but also the place and the roles that they play in this family dynamic is similar in this weird way. I also thought it was great to see Richard Roundtree. I mean, hey.
Shaft.
Exactly.
A little bit different character, still looked really good. No longer with us, as Dan indicated. But yeah, this is a sweet little movie if you were to run across it, you know, as you're scrolling through video on demand offerings right now. It's in theaters. I'd say check it out.
Well, Thelma was the opening night film at this year's Seattle International Film Festival.
Oh, was
and it was also at Sundance, wasn't
shout
it?
Shout out to the Seattle International Film Festival. That's where I saw it. I went to the opening night gala. severely underdressed, as I am every year at that event, and saw it. And you
but
can,
it's Seattle.
I mean,
were you naked? How could you be underdressed?
T-shirt. You know, I wasn't okay. One of the only ones. I'll just say that. And I sit way, way in the back, so no one can see me. But you can probably imagine how well this played for a packed house at a film festival on the opening night.
With some of the regulars.
Yes, and June Squibb was there, and so there was just kind of a sense of celebration for its 50th anniversary. So I didn't dislike this movie at all, but I didn't like it as intensely as a lot of the other people in that opening night crowd, which is usually the case. I just thought that it was a little too predictable and schematic in its structure for my taste. There are moments where this veers into sitcom territory. Mm-hmm. I got a little tired of the jokes about, isn't it funny that old people don't know how technology works? We've seen that before. But there were other
running
gags.
Would you help me work my iPhone, Nathan?
After this, I'll show you how to do that update, Uncle Dan, yeah. but there are some running gags in Thelma that did work for me. She is inspired by watching one of the Mission Impossible films to go after her scammers. And so just the kind
inspired
of generic,
by Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, yes. The generic Mission Impossible music will kick in and, you know, she goes off, but at a much slower pace than Tom Cruise does. But there's this running gag that she keeps running into other old women that she thinks she knows and everything stops so they can be like, oh, your grandson. And then it turns out that they don't know each other at all. I thought that was really funny. So it's got stuff like that. Amazing supporting cast, Parker Posey, Clark Gregg, Nicole Byer, Malcolm McDowell shows up at the end. I forgot he's in the opening credits and I forgot he was in the movie.
Wonder what part is he going to play?
Yeah, and so that was a nice surprise. And I was describing this movie, you called it a cadre comedy. I was describing it as a less melancholy version of The Straight Story.
Yes,
the David
Straight
Lynch
Story.
Film, which as you'll recall was Richard Farnsworth, as the old man who got on his riding lawnmower.
Right.
And he went, you know, cross country. June Squibb's character only goes a few miles. And also just the fact that this particular scamming operation is happening within like a 15-mile radius of her house also doesn't seem all that believable. No. You just have to go with it. But I agree with you. I mean, this is one of those movies that I really can't imagine someone disliking altogether because you have so much goodwill, not only towards June Squibb, who has kind of had this late in life, you know, career boost after her Oscar nomination for Nebraska. To see her in a lead role is really great. And then just Richard Roundtree, it was really bittersweet to see him. And as you said, in the type of role that we don't normally associate with him, there's another funny bit about the musical production that he's starring in at his retirement home. I won't give away the joke there, but that was funny too.
Yeah. What did you think about the music? Because in the first half, there was a lot of bongo drums and, you know, everything trying to push the action along.
Right. Well, and as I said, you know, the music will kick in and it kind of sounds like Lalo Schifrin, but it's not quite that. It's like the off-brand version of that. But I mean, it's kind of funny. Like the juxtaposition is supposed to get you to laugh that it's this action-y music with this lady at her computer.
You know, there was a time in which I didn't think Parker Posey was a very good actress. Early on, she always played a particular character.
Don't say that.
I agree. Shut up.
Her line readings seem stilted. But as the years have gone on, she's gotten to be a very good actress, I think. She's really good in this.
Yeah.
And what was the movie that she played in, supporting role?
Waiting for Guffman?
No.
Best in Show?
No, I'm just trying to think of the...
Okay. Bo is Afraid?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Remember? At the very end, how could I?
I mean, how could I forget? But I just did. But,
yeah. But, I mean, she was terrific in Bo is Afraid.
I agree. She's terrific in everything.
But, you know, all those years ago... I don't think
it wasn't clear if she was going to become sort of just this indie comedic presence.
Exactly.
She could have been
a Gen X flash in the pan.
Exactly.
Kind of
correct.
Character.
No, I understand that.
Character. But I know what you mean.
I also like sort of how they portrayed the home where Richard Roundtree was living because it was simultaneously horrifying.
Was it Starry Harry?
Starry Harry, yes. And then June Squibb's character, Thelma, she does not want to be in that circumstance, and you can understand why. At the same time, you can see how this setting might work for some other people. So I kind of like the way they walked that line there.
And I do have to give Thelma a little bit of credit because I called it, you know, kind of slight and more of a crowd pleaser than an actual examination of what it means to get old. But the movie does occasionally stop to ruminate on those things. It doesn't completely ignore them. And so even though this was maybe a little too sitcom-y for my taste, it's a good sitcom in a lot of ways. And June Squibb, I mean, she can do no wrong and she's terrific in this movie.
At any rate, that was our discussion of Thelma. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Ghostlight and Hitman. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the feature film Thelma. We'll continue our examination of films that explore human psychology in this half, looking at the movies Ghostlight and the Netflix streamer Hitman. Few things are more heart-wrenching than watching characters with repressed emotions get pulled toward confronting life's trying moments, especially when those moments involve personal tragedies. Such a character is Dan, played by Keith Kupferer, a construction worker who is sleepwalking through life, trying to corral his incorrigible daughter Daisy, played by Catherine Mallon Kupferer, and stay connected to his wife Sharon, played by Tara Mallon, as they weather the process of an at-first mysterious lawsuit. By chance, one of the few fanciful moments in the film, Dan gets connected to a local community theatrical group, encouraged especially by one of the members, Rita, played by Dolly De Leon. And it is through that group and the play that they intend to put on, Romeo and Juliet, that Dan is coaxed into facing up to and dealing with the event that has nearly torn his family apart. Co-directed by Kelly O'Sullivan and Alex Thompson, from a script written by O'Sullivan, Ghostlight benefits from the three main leads being an actual family in real life. That and the film's overall feeling of authenticity makes Ghostlight one of the more affecting films that 2024 has yet seen.
I do want to come back to that idea of authenticity in Ghostlight, because I'll start off by talking about the stuff that I found to be the opposite of authentic, which are sort of the parallels that develop between the play that is being performed, Romeo and Juliet, and the actual tragedy that happened to this family, which I don't want to give too much away because the movie hangs on to those details for a long time. And when they're finally revealed, it is worth, you know,
waiting for.
Get why they were withholding it. So I'll do the same. But I found those parallels to be way too on the nose. I mean, obviously, it's making a statement about art reflecting life, and art does reflect life, and sometimes in ways that are uncanny. But I just thought it was a little clunky the way that it's done here, because the parallels are so obvious. And also, there's this subplot in which this guy, Dan, is sort of sneaking around going to play practice, and there's the inevitable, again, kind of sitcomish subplot in which, you know, the daughter thinks maybe he's having an affair, and she walks in on him in these bizarre circumstances, and it's all a big misunderstanding. But those things are blessedly brief, because I think this is otherwise Ghostlight is a really powerful movie. And I think a lot of it has to do with that central performance by Keith Kupferer. This is a performance that will not be talked about come Oscar time, because he is not a known quantity. He's a character actor who, if you look up, you might not recognize his face, but you look up his credits and you go, oh, he was in a bunch of things that I have seen before.
Mm-hmm.
He is fantastic in this movie, and it all builds to this scene at a deposition. And the entire time this movie Ghostlight was going on, I thought, do we really need this whole, you know,
lawsuit
parallel thing? Yeah, I thought this just kind of feels like it's cluttering up the story. But then we get to that deposition scene, we realize, oh, that's what this subplot was doing in the movie, because it is such incredible acting, and it just ties all of the movie together. And if you're not just hit in the gut during that scene, then you're not paying attention. It is really powerful, and it kind of wipes away a lot of the criticisms that I have.
I totally agree.
Because this is a very low budget movie. It is an amateur production in some ways. It's maybe a bit too long, and some of the dialogue and performances are a little bit awkward. But I think, you know, what it's trying to say about how art hits you and how you see yourself in art and how you contend with things that characters in the art that you love are doing and how you relate to them. I think all of that is really well done. And again, that central performance, I think, is really a knocker.
Much less how you deal with grief.
That too, yeah. And sometimes through art. Yeah.
Well, and I'm just going to throw another thing out there that I found incredible. The play that is being put on by this theater troupe is Romeo and Juliet. And so dad like asks his daughter, have you ever heard of this play, Romeo and Juliet? And I'm like, oh, come on.
Well, and then she immediately responds
right,
you know.
Even if it wasn't the Shakespeare version, yeah. like, come on. Yeah. Like, I just found that to be incredible.
I figured that the filmmakers chose Romeo and Juliet because it's public domain. That was my
guess. Oh, well, that could be a reason. Now, the one thing that we didn't really emphasize, because I think this is significant in some ways, this is a father, mother, and daughter. They are all related in real life.
The actors.
Yeah. And so the fact that, I mean, because there are some parts of this, like Daisy, the daughter, is acting out big time.
Yeah. Big
and
time,
the parents don't know what to do with her, and we don't understand fully, like, what's going on. You know, is she just a recalcitrant teenager? Like, what's happening here? And then the slow reveal tells us more. But yeah, I mean, she is totally obnoxious, and she's just angry. She's furious. She's enraged. And we don't necessarily appreciate fully what's happening there. But you can see, you know, when they have to go in and meet with the school principal, for example, about what's transpired. I mean, it felt really real. You know, they're a real family. That was really intriguing to me.
And, you know, and I mean, I agreed with both of you to the extent that there were parts of Ghostlight that, I mean, his whole notion of his being roped into being in this community theater, you know, I found that hard to believe also. But all that said, the authenticity of the acting, the authenticity of the moments of grief absolutely had me stifling sobs at least twice during the film. Ghostlight, I can't remember the last time I was affected this much by a film. At any rate, let's now turn from the feature film Ghostlight to the Netflix offering Hitman. What happens when a button-down college professor who challenges his students to take chances in life, yet he himself drives a Honda Civic and eats alone in his pet-filled apartment, gets a chance to be someone else? That's the scenario that director Richard Linklater, working from a script that he wrote with the actor Glenn Powell, is working with in Hitman. Powell stars as Gary Johnson, who is enlisted to fill the role of a police undercover operator whose job is to catch, some would say entrap, people who want to hire him to kill someone. Gary proves quite capable and even begins to become more charismatic in his real life until he runs into Madison, played by Aria Arjona, a potential client whom he falls for. Based on a real story, a Texas Monthly article written by Skip Hollinsworth, Linklater's film evolves into a, quote, somewhat true story, unquote, when Gary is confronted by a cop whose place he took, played by Austin Amelio. But that just adds to the, well, fun that Linklater ends up putting on the screen. That, of course, and Powell, who is emerging as this year's actor of the moment.
He's definitely the it guy. There's no question about that. And I think that that was one of the struggles I had with Hitman, because I'm really not fond of bad hair in movies. Now, of course, he's going to be imitating these different people. So I had resigned myself to the fact that there would be a lot of bad hair. But when he is playing himself, the college professor, he has like the worst wig ever. I mean, here's this guy who is, you know, movie star, gorgeous, and they try to make him look ugly. And it's sort of like trying to make Jennifer Aniston look ugly. And it just doesn't quite work. But once you get beyond that, you find out that our lead character does have this unusual ability to imitate and be exactly what these potential murder-for-hire people would like. And so it really does allow an opportunity for Powell to show his acting range, because we're not really sure after the movies that we've seen him in to date. Is he just going to be a pretty boy? Twister seems to follow on the, you know, in the same tradition as Top Gun and
Anyone But You with Sydney Sweeney.
Movie. But this allows him to do something different and something else here. The thing I couldn't connect with here, and Dan and I think disagree on this, I did not find that the love interest, so the woman who wants to deal with her husband, you know, have the
Madison,
hitman off her husband. And I watch a lot of these murder shows, and I know sort of how this plays out. I just didn't find that whole thing realistic in any way. I mean, I found that they did not seem to have a connection to my way of thinking. And Dan disagrees with this, but her character, I think she was miscast. She did not work for me in this film.
Well, I think that Hitman kind of rises and falls on Glenn Powell because, I mean, he is the reason to watch it, and his performance is so good. I mean, this feels like a star vehicle Carol in all of those ways, because he gets to put on all the costumes and play all the different versions of himself in a certain sense. But I also totally agree with you that the idea that this guy is a wallflower that nobody has looked twice at, I mean, give me a break. He is one of the most handsome people that you've ever seen. And they're like, oh, you know, they put him in these.
Is our professor, did he change his hair? Does he look different?
They put him in these pleated khakis and these oversized golf shirts. And I'm like, that still looks like Glenn Powell. It also makes no sense why the New Orleans Police Department, because it's not set in Linklater's home state of Texas, it's set in New Orleans, makes no sense why the police department would allow this freelance guy to come in and be privy to all of the details of these federal cases. That never makes sense. And I've read the original article by Skip Hollandsworth, which, and they say this in the end credits, but it sort of reveals Powell and Linklater's, they're taking liberties with a lot of the facts, but to the detriment of the story in some cases. And Hollandsworth wrote a Texas Weekly article that Linklater turned into the film Bernie, with Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine and Matthew McConaughey,
which
I think
reviewed
is a better
years
film.
Ago. And
yes,
we,
and
we
I think
liked
is a better
it, yeah.
film than this. But I have to admit, this is a breezy, funny, well-paced movie. And I love Linklater, I think more than either of you. And this to me is minor Linklater, but he just has such a sure hand in movies like this that you just kind of go with it, even while you're rolling your eyes at some of the things that are happening.
Yeah.
And just by the fact that Glenn Powell has a co-writing credit on this, you know, maybe this is not only showing his range as an actor, but also maybe his abilities in other respects.
Well, apparently, from what I read, they were having trouble finding the story here. And it was Powell who said, hey, let's just do this, you
Let's
know,
just
and
make
so
something
there's,
up.
There's a whole ending to it that did not happen in real life.
Yes, and I would recommend that if you can find the Skip Hollandsworth article, just Google Hitman Skip Hollandsworth. The original article is fascinating in its own right, and the guy that is the subject, the Gary Johnson that's the subject of that piece, is a different guy than we get in the movie version of Hitman, but I think there's still even another movie that could be made about that guy, and it wouldn't be anything like this one. Mm.
And that was our discussion of the Netflix streamer Hitman. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the feature films Thelma and Ghostlight. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot, on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the great Charles Dickens from his novel A Tale of Two Cities. A wonderful fact to reflect upon, that every human creature is constituted to be that profound secret and mystery to every other. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.